Friday afternoon deploy was saved using, damn it.
That's it.
It lives
perfect.
It lives in my hands too, but I can't say that.
You know that's going to be it. Casey's gonna be like, nope, that one.
All right, well, it is another Friday afternoon deploy, hopefully a deploy free one.
Yes.
I don't have anything in the canon.
No, I'm on a kind of a freeze of that right now. You know, because it's Friday.
That doesn't always necessitate a freeze.
No, it doesn't. I'm not sure if I know you've deployed on air,
and yeah, I have.
I think I have too. If not, I was doing debugging on prod in an episode.
Nice. Mm-hmm. So, is your product on a feature freeze right now? Like, are you not deploying at all? Oh, that's right, because your product's in showcase mode.
Way to ask me a question while I'm eating popcorn.
Yeah, I decided I would answer it. I saw you eating and wanted to help you out.
Thanks, yeah.
Yeah, your product's being showcased. It's being paraded around
like a pony.
Like a labradoodle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
any word on how that's gone?
So far, so good. Otherwise, I would be squashing bugs, I suppose, right now. So that's good.
Yeah, let's debug live during the product reveal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That sounds like a great idea. sadly, not like one that hasn't actually happened a bunch.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. I'm thankful I'm also at a place where in not of need of any bug fixes or anything's rolled out. So
it's been rolling out good. All day.
All day, yeah.
All day long.
That's how you roll.
It's a test server.
Oh, you got a test server up?
Yeah.
Sweet. Well, today it is, I am Tyrell Dennison, and we've got Hayden Lookenbach with us. We've got Alan Fraley, and the guest.
I'm waving like they can see me.
The guest who is potentially rolling out right now is Jeremy Welkley, and Jeremy works here in Fayetteville at a company called Field Agent. And we'll make him tell us all about that in a moment. But first, Jeremy, thanks for coming on the podcast. We're glad to have you.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was great to get your text last night saying, hey, can you come on?
I don't know what you're talking about. We planned this out like months in advance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was good. No, I've been actually excited about coming on for a while. So it's nice to be here and actually finally see the digs.
Yeah.
Field Agent.
Yeah, so tell us.
Yeah, tell us.
What is Field Agent? What do you do at Field Agent? Us and anyone else that might be listening. It's probably just us listening as well.
There's no one else out there.
No.
So I'm a developer, senior developer at Field Agent. We change the way the world collects business information. That's our blurb.
Mm.
That's what I got from PR.
Well blurbed.
So we have products that we collect data, and we can quickly do that via mobile crowdsourcing. We have agents, and they go out in the industry and become our eyes and ears to do whatever our clients want, pretty much get the informations.
So who is an agent?
Anyone that has a mobile phone, Android or iOS, can download our app and sign up. Then they can perform jobs, which are anywhere from checking a price from some type of product to checking in stock, out of stock, availability, to research. We do research stuff. So we can get your demographics, and you can agree to tell us all about what you purchase or don't purchase or why you do or do not. And we actually recently acquired a company that has become our new, forgot the name of it, Field Media Division, so we'll be doing shopper marketing as well, so it's kind of cool.
Right on.
And trying to merge all that into normal day-to-day processes and make it happen.
Yeah, that sounds like a fun kind of topic of conversation. Like, hey, here's your business. Here's another business. Make them the same business. Mm-hmm. Like, that seems like that would be...
Make them compatible.
Yeah.
It's a merge. It's actually fairly decent because a lot of what the company we acquired was doing involved Field Agent. So our field media team was actively using Field Agent a lot. And so it just kind of made sense. We just kind of zipped it up. Zipper.
So they were pretty... So was the integration pretty deep one way, or was it both ways already? Like, what kind of... What does the transition look like that, like, now that you're the same company, who had to do more work?
So Field Agent is an API. Uh-huh. And so the company that we acquired was SMAC. SMAC was accessing our API to gather data to do their marketing for shopping stuff. So when we started the merge, their team became a division in our team. And then, so we're just kind of getting rid of that middleman piece.
Okay. So. Sweet.
Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
Okay.
One thing I'll point out rather than ask leadingly, just for the sake of not being bizarrely obtuse, especially in light of our last episode where I was just like, Facebook is the devil. Don't do anything with Facebook. They're gathering your data and selling it.
I love Facebook.
Yeah. Field Agent asks users to collect data on their behalf. They don't collect their users' data without them knowing or anything like that. Like the app is a tool for your agents to collect data with rather than a tool to collect data from your agents.
Correct. We pay our agents
to
do stuff.
Yes.
To answer surveys, basically. Yes. Yeah. We are the first app that pays you. Whenever the iOS app launched, we were the first app in the App Store that would actually pay people with the app instead of the people paying the app to do things.
Mm. I didn't realize that.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
We were the first app that pays you is what our slogan was whenever it was just the iPhone. We pay our agents to answer questions, basically.
Sweet. And you guys, and I have a personal connection with Field Agent. I used to work there. I don't know. That's not like a legal disclosure. It's just like when I reference some stuff and people are like, how the heck do you know that? It's like, well, this is my old stomping grounds. So I think everybody in here knew that.
We did.
Yeah.
It's no surprise.
Yeah. There's some shocked listeners. They're just like, what? Like clutching their pearls. Like, what is he doing? It's a conspiracy.
how did that happen?
I know. That's great, man. What have you got going on these days? Like, what's kind of your main work? Well,
believe it or not, we're actually migrating from Python 2.7 to Python 3.6.
Nice.
That's exciting.
That's one of our biggest upcoming things, plus lots of security updates. So we are currently... We're our Django shop, just like you guys like to use the Djangos. So Django 1.8.9. Django 1.8 was the long-term, the latest long-term release that went out of date, and that's what we're on. So we're upgrading to 2.1 with the Python 3s at the same time.
Wow.
And fighting the deprecations.
Are you finding a lot of them?
There's a lot. Between 1.8 and 2.1, there's a lot of deprecations.
Stuff that you're using, or just like stuff like, oh, okay,
nothing
good to know.
At this point, nothing is breaking
nothing
as far
breaking.
As Django goes, but there's a lot of stuff that we have to go in and fix.
Everything's just a wash of deprecation warnings when you...
Yes.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Ugh. It's like a mile long.
Nice.
So are you guys trying to make the... version jump all at one time, or are you going like,
yeah, what's your strategy?
1.9,
we have 2.0, a dedicated
2.1.
We have a dedicated developer right now, literally just sitting at his local environment plugging away at everything to get it fixed to where it's up and running. We're not using Futurize, Modernize to...
Oh, so you're not using any of the tools?
Literally, like, set up an environment,
start
and
punching holes,
see what breaks.
Do you have any kind of unit tests or like front end tests or Selenium tests that are poking it, or is it all just human try the thing and see?
When does this go live again?
It'll be a week from today.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, of course, we have lots and lots of unit tests.
Sure, we all do.
Yeah.
No. We're all in like 98% test coverage. Of course. So
our test-driven development would be after we get it up and running, we're going to like test everything. So we've got a plan to go in and test all the endpoints and all the products. That's pretty much it. So we have multiple layers of test environment. So we got a local environment. We have a test environment that's completely separated database. And then we have a sandbox environment that has its own step up from the test database, and then a production staging area, and then a production area. So the idea there is that once we get it running locally, it should work fine on the test server, fix any test environment issues, and then just make sure we don't miss anything.
Yeah. So the guy who's going through that, is he just like brute force hammering through everything, or is the app at a point where it'll actually start, or is it still at a point where like he goes to fire it up and it's just like a sea of errors, like one at a time, kind of working through that?
I believe he's currently got the local environment Python 3 ready. And he's fighting deprecation warnings now with the Django 2. So got a lot of hope for the actual rollout. It's actually not too daunting now that he's started. I think we were all kind of scared of it. And you know, there's such huge changes going from 2.7 to 3.
Yeah. So. I know that's, in my time there, I get to play a role kind of taking some of the work that one of the other developers, Seth, did in migrating the entire app, because the app was originally built before migrations were standard in Django, and I think, did you guys use South?
We never used South.
Never used South. And so going in and like getting to the point to where we could run a test suite on the app required first migrating the entire app, and so kind of going through and waiting through all that. And I remember being just on the edge of my seat going, oh man, we're about to migrate, run these migrations on all of production and like change the structure of this app forever, and just not sure how it was going to go. And everything went fine. And since then, I found out that there are some people that just to clean up their migrations because of like merge migrations and everything, will just kind of once every 6 months go delete all their migrations and rerun migrate and then fake it and go from there, or delete the migrations, like empty the migrations table and just kind of clean up their migrations that way. And so you're not having a bunch of squashed migrations and things of that nature. So it's just a house cleaning method to kind of get everything looking real nice.
That's actually more work to squash migrations than it is to delete them all and start over.
Yeah.
Mm, yeah.
I've done some migration squashing, and it can get pretty tedious because then you're having like, well, these all worked, and these are dependent on this, and which of these were run SQL, and which of these were run Python, and hopefully all your run SQL and Python aren't needed post. Most of the time, that's like fixing something that you need to like convert some old data or things of that nature, and so kind of working from there. But yeah, I've definitely spent some time in the migration files trying to get those manageable. It can get pretty hairy. So you're saying you guys aren't using Future or Modernize, huh?
Unless we have to. No, that's correct. So everyone's got the third-party modules that you use for dependencies. So if there's not a Python 3 compatible upgrade for some type of dependency that we have to have, then we'll be futurizing those ourselves.
Yeah.
Yes.
So that'll be fun. You get to contribute to open source.
Yes.
Look at you. We
love the open sources.
Yeah, open source. Or as our friend Chris Hobbs calls them, open sores.
Yes.
I'm going to get a text when he listens to this later. I'm really looking forward to that now in a week.
Yeah.
It'll be fun.
Be like, what are you talking about?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, he instantly. Yes. Mm. All the sores. That's cool. Have there been many instances of dependencies you guys have found that's kind of slowed things down for you?
So far, there's pretty much a Python 3 version of everything that we found so far.
Yeah.
The only thing that we haven't found or that has been problematic so far is of an hour code. Yeah, so the things that we've ran circles around and hacked together in, you know, product development and vaporware that now is non-existent and we have to either delete it or and hope it doesn't break anything.
Yeah.
Or then you know, somehow modernize it to where it'll work with three.
Comment it out for a little while. See what screams.
Yes.
That way you don't forget it. Yeah.
Yeah. What the can you go into like one of the things that you guys did that you found that, and if you can't, that's fine too. I don't know what you found. But like where your code didn't make the translation from Python 2 to Python 3? Like, is there an instance you can think of?
Not from Python 2 to Python 3. So we all use PyCharm for our IDE, and PyCharm has a really great PEP8 highlighting.
Yeah.
And so we've all the developers have set up PyCharm to yell at us whenever it's not Python 3 compatible.
Yeah.
So anything that we had in our 2.7 code that wasn't Python 3 compatible, we've been changing for about 3 to 6 months now. Mm. But nothing huge. That major differences would be like division that we haven't looked into, and Unicode strings that don't exist anymore.
Yeah,
so that's a big one. Yeah,
all the Unicode. I don't miss having to type that U, I'll be honest.
Yeah, no. Yeah, don't you? You probably don't have like a ton of print statements in there, I would imagine.
No, once we figured out how to do logging, we started you know, doing it the right way.
Yeah.
It took a while to figure out that logging, but.
Yeah.
The print statements go away.
Yeah. Django makes the logging pretty painless, I suppose, because it's the Python logger library that's built in. So,
yeah. That's been good. I know the current app that I work on was migrated. Mm-hmm. Casey migrated it 2 years ago, maybe?
2 years ago.
2 years ago. And he used, I'm pretty sure, a year's future. And did it in a 4-hour period. Now, granted, the bulk of this app is Python and like not Django. It's not nearly as much of a Django monolith as what we had at Field Agent. But I can instantly think of all the print statements that some of the other developers on the team have put all over the place. I bet that was the bulk of Casey's morning, was like changing all of those print statements because they're all over the place.
Yeah, and so now they're functions, right? Instead of I don't know what they were.
Yeah, I don't technically know what they were. There's one that plagues us that we've got a specific task in the parsing of data files. Like the app will parse some sort of data source and convert it into this version of data that the app itself then takes and does things with and manipulates and run algorithms on. But in that parse, there's a print statement somewhere that will always print an empty array. Just beep, you just see it go through your console. No one has been able to find that print statement. It taunts us.
Oh, we cannot need find. A bounty.
We do, like, it's just, you're just like doing your stuff and you run your thing, see how it goes, and then you just see that empty array just like fly by and mock you, like, I'm still here. And it just goes past. Like, why hasn't anyone found that yet? Arash, one of the other devs on the team, thought he found it the other day, and he was super excited.
Yeah,
he's like, I found it. I'm like, sweet. And then he ran, he's just like, no, that wasn't it. I was like, oh, no. So, yeah, I the print statement seemed to be the biggest one by far.
Mm-hmm.
So,
because I know, like, you know, in comparison, going from Django 1 to Django 2 is the switch from URLs to you and URLs being the functions to path functions.
Oh yeah.
Which is great once you get that migrated over, because that, I don't know, I'm not a big fan of regexing anything really if I can help it. So that's nice once you get that transferred over. It's kind of more like Flask and how Flask handles URLs.
I haven't touched the URLs yet.
Yeah.
That'll be a thing.
You'll be sad though, because I know you were.
I really love Regex.
He loves Regex.
Oh, that's why you were looking at me. Yeah, like, he was just like,
what's your problem with Regex, man? Yeah,
why don't you like Regex? It's the amazing thing in the world. It's the
just like I don't ever. Like anything else. I don't like. I don't understand it. I don't understand it, and it scares me a little bit.
I believe that is literally the definition of prejudice. I don't. I might be using literally wrong there, but I'm fairly confident that is.
My boss literally cringes every time I say Regex.
Yeah. Does he not like it either?
He doesn't understand it.
Yeah, exactly, right? It's
what is this gibberish that you typed in here?
Well, yeah, it's kind of like, you know, what's this Perl doing in my Python? I think, that's what happened there
right.
a long time ago, right? But yeah, and what's interesting is, so I'm working on a Django 1 project that presumably I'll have to migrate one day.
Now,
it's 1.11 though, so I've got a while, but I've gotten used to the URLs again, and I'm not so scared of regexing at least a URL now. You just have to remember your $ and go ahead and put a slash in there too at the end of it.
Yeah,
don't forget the slash.
I didn't realize that was a Python 1 project Django 1.
Yep, Django 1.11. Huh. Yeah.
Has that switch been like? You just said you're used to it, obviously, but like, did you find yourself blowing stuff up accidentally all the time when you first got in there, or was it just kind of like, oh no, we're good?
Not too much. I'd blow something up and be able to fix it pretty quick. But it's like I haven't really got the chance to lean in fully into Django 2 to really have the path feel natural though. Like there's something about the URL that is like, oh yeah, old friend.
That's what you've known for so long. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But whenever I saw what was changing with Django 2, the path though, I was like, oh yeah, no, that totally makes sense. Especially with, I think the thing though, that's still, what I really like about the path is, like if you're doing a detail view, and you have to have a primary key or a slug in there, and you're regexing that guy. Like that's kind of where it's. I got to look it up and just recite the incantation. I don't really know what it's doing.
Copy and paste and try it until it works.
Uh-huh.
I will now quote the good saint Stack Overflow, in hopes that he will
indeed. Yeah.
Produce.
Yeah. This D plus, like it's a digit, I think. Right. Yeah. Oh. Yeah.
Yeah. I think you're right. Yeah, surely.
I probably understand more regex than I would like to let on.
Yeah. You just fake like you don't like regex. you like regex. You're just
subconsciously.
Yeah. Mm. You're going to come out as a regex like evangelist now that you know that you have like one compatriot with Jeremy. You're just like, finally somebody else that loves regex. Like,
I'm going to start a meetup.
It's true.
You're going to start a regex meetup. Yeah.
Northwest Arkansas regex
meetup. We can have t-shirts that something clever.
Make it legit.
Yeah.
No one can read unless they know regex.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm already confused by that.
Don't wrinkle your nose at us.
Regex. Yes, I will wrinkle my nose at regex t-shirts every chance I get. I'm trying to think. There have been some pretty ridiculous shirts that have involved like programming and things of that nature.
The nerd shirts.
Yeah. Yes,
mm-hmm. I love those.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's the like. There's no place like one dot. 127.0.0.1. That's a pretty good one.
Yeah.
So
localhost.
Yeah. I know, right? Yeah. Yeah. No place like localhost.
Mm-hmm. Didn't quite add up.
Or if you're doing Django multi-tenancy, your host file is just all jacked up with all sorts. I got all kinds of stuff that's localhost in my host file now on this machine.
Oh, has it got multi-tenancy? Yeah.
Yeah, that Django 1 app that I'm working on. Yeah, multi-tenancy.
I've yet to take that on.
Yeah, it's its own special delight.
Yeah,
it's not too bad mostly, but you will get used to working in one domain or the other, and you have to keep track kind of which ones which and whatnot, and then you have to be careful with your querying the database and make sure to filter it properly and all that fun stuff. But that's where Django middleware can help you a lot.
For sure.
Yeah. Custom middleware, though. But, yeah.
Like you roll your own?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, to parse the domain, or the subdomain, I guess, to be technical there, yeah.
I'll allow it.
Thank you.
So I ran my biggest kind of soiree into multi-tenancy was with a big e-commerce multi-site platform that I built for Daisy with the different real estate there. And that was actually like whole other domains, like Winchester Air Rifles and Daisy.com. And then, I'll go ahead and let the cat out of the bag. Daisy also owns First Nature, which is a bird feeder company, which they weren't huge fans of letting people know. Like, they didn't intentionally go like, yeah, we're going to buy a bird feeder company for target practice. But of course, that's like immediately where your mind goes. Like, the BB gun company owns a bird feeder company. Mm-hmm. I hate you people.
It's like the oil companies that do all the tree.
Yeah.
Arbor Days. Yeah,
exactly.
Thing.
Like, we'll just make up for it. No, yeah. It's, so they wanted to make sure that firstnature.net had no references to the other two properties, but it was a multi-tenant site built on Drupal. No, I'm sorry. And then but it had the same e-commerce backend. So I imagine that's probably very similar to what you're doing, since you're building a multi-tenant e-commerce site with Django.
Yeah. So it's the same domain, but different subdomains.
Yeah.
But yeah, as far as the code's concerned, I'm sure it's quite similar.
Yeah. No, because that was Drupal, and nothing but madness there for you.
Sure. Yeah. I know not this madness, luckily. I escaped it.
Yeah. It was good. You're better for it.
Speaking of madness, I thought of something else with the Python 3 conversion.
Yeah.
You were talking about how print became from something to a function where you have to include the parentheses.
Mm-hmm.
Open, the function to open a file.
Oh, yeah.
You have to import OS now and OS.open to call the function instead of just doing it like print.
Yeah. I hadn't even thought about that one.
It's causing us quite a grief.
I see.
I bet. Yeah.
I like the context manager syntax for that. So you can do with open.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm with you.
And unless you import it.
This is true.
Otherwise, it fails up and down. So I don't remember if I talked about it on the last podcast or not, but I know it came up. And apparently, Hayden, you kind of fought the same fight I was fighting with debugging with Go, and just kind of having to build, try, error. Go tweak code, build, try, error, and making the transition to a compiled language versus the dynamic language. That was kind of bewildering to deal with. I ran into that again this week where I was having a really random thing that I had to kind of I know I can get everything working within the Docker container that I'm using, but the Go language talking to the Docker container is choking somewhere and I can't find it. And I don't know enough. I'm not proficient enough with Go to be able to debug with it, and so it's just put a printf in here and see what I can get from the corpse of this last build to try and then troubleshoot that.
Yeah, and then there's a couple different things that you can import something to print with from. So you have to make that decision too.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I've also found frustrating. What I've loved about what's great about Python is even if it doesn't with duck typing that you don't get with Go, is if you try and print something,
it'll print it, whatever it is.
Yeah, Python will print it. It's just it'll just tell you what that object is or whatever. With Go, I've so many times gone and well, print this, and they're just we can't print that. That's not a string.
It's not a string. So
you can
check the top thing off your list.
But yeah,
that's about it.
We can't print that. That's not a map.
What else did you see, buddy?
Can you print a map? And it's just that's a string now. I can't print it now. You told me print a map. It's just we just need one print thing. No? Okay, cool.
Hmm.
So it's been fun making that transition. I've enjoyed my time working in Go for sure.
Yeah, it's It's interesting. I haven't done a lot with it, but I've done a little bit, and that specifically was something that was interesting because I remember learning Python and from my mentors and things. You would you learn about it's an interpreted language. Well, what's that mean? It's not compiled, not exactly, and yeah, whatever. I don't know exactly what that means, but then getting to work with a compiled language, that's what that means, and that's why we invented interpreted languages to try to avoid this pain if we could.
I'll also correct myself before the comments roll in. I said dynamic when I meant interpreted, but
yeah, I'll allow it.
I appreciate that. Fair enough.
Fair enough. Yeah.
that kind of debugging has been arduous to say the least. Mm. But I found a way to get better because the shape of what I'm building is Python code running in a Docker container being installed and run by Go, and so my Python code has to work, and then my Docker configurations have to work, and then my Go has to work. So I'm going through three layers of handoff, and it's unnecessary complication for the sake of giving something to stakeholders that they can easily install on their system is what it really boils down to. And so since Go can take all that and wrap it up nice and make it an executable to install with, it's just like, sweet, there. You don't have to make sure you have a decent version of Python or all these dependencies installed and all of that. So it's the way that we, as a Python-heavy shop, tend to write more complicated things that we can deliver as like installable pieces. So
yeah, the deliverability of Go kind of makes up for maybe the learning curve there, right?
Yeah, it's kind of an abusive Go. Honestly, it really is. Yeah. It's like, I'm gonna do that in Python. Like, I could write all the same code in Go. Well, not so much because I use a lot of Python libraries
mm-hmm.
that definitely, well, I say definitely, I'm quite certain aren't available in Go, but maybe they are. I didn't spend the time to look, but I'm pretty sure they're not.
Yeah, because Python's been around a while and heavily embraced by the science community. So, especially if you're doing some more data science-y stuff with your data, then that's definitely going to make that easier. Don't know that a lot of that stuff's there in Go. Go is it's like C with HTTP built into it. So just let that hang there.
That's what I say. So profound. We're all speechless at that.
Did I mention that I parsed JSON in C?
Yes. Yeah. I don't envy that project.
No, that's why I can brag about it now.
Yeah, he did that thing.
I did. Yeah,
that's impressive. Yeah, I'm still trying to wrap my head around the whole C with HTTP.
Yeah, because that's so like C doesn't support that out of the box, because back in the 70s, the machines didn't really need to talk to each other, so no one solved that problem, but yet. C's it's still really fast and really small. So if you have a small board that you need to execute code on, but you're dependent upon configuration or something coming from the user, HTTP is an option, though, to get that into the board. But you have to parse it once it gets there, and you have to serialize it to possibly send it back. So that's good old fashioned string manipulation. There is what that is.
Regex.
C doesn't have regex out of the box either.
I'm really looking forward to like the neckbeard comments that we get mm-hmm. from the keywords when we're just talking like regex, C, Go,
yeah.
Compile.
I know.
Like it's going to be a whole lot. We're going to bring a whole new listener audience off those silly keywords that are going to be in the metadata, and they're going to. We're going to have a whole lot of people smarter than us at all of these things skewing us in the comments.
I'm sure, yeah.
Casey does not need to promote this episode on Reddit. Like, hey, guys, check out this one. He's like, no.
Yeah, we discuss Go and our vast knowledge thereof.
Yeah.
We just, you know, they bring us a problem, they being a client, and we're just like, well, let's solve that problem, and we find the tools that we can solve it with. That doesn't mean we become experts immediately in these tools, but you know, maybe novice to what's the intermediate one?
Intermediate.
Amateur? Would that be amateur?
I think it is intermediate. Yeah, maybe. Oh. Yeah. I don't know.
I got fancy. I shouldn't have. I'm sorry.
That's all right.
It's fair enough. Was it the
kind of feels like amateur is not as novice as novice.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
I'm not sure.
That's possible. I think of like the polymath. Like the like not no master was it
cause you got like
jack of all trades, master of none.
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
It's definitely kind of like that, right? I guess what I was thinking of is like, you know, you have an apprentice and then you're like eventually you're the master of whatever it is.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We were talking about that last week, with master, journeyman, and all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, like that. Yeah.
Yeah. That was good. So I'm going to be a vindictive old man this week.
All right.
And
are we going to hate on, is this the Facebook, I hate Facebook segment?
this is the Let's Laugh at Facebook
segment, okay.
Which is always based strongly on the I hate Facebook segment.
Sure. But,
I love Facebook.
So we've got opposition to our opinions now.
Well, I just love that that's the automatic response. I'm sure everyone will have long heard of it at this point, but it's worth at least touching on for the sake of let's all maybe talk about it. Was when Apple found out, so Facebook got exposed for using their apps, their internal developer, their developer certificate, and to put apps on people's phones that weren't in their company, and that violated terms of service. So Apple's like, yeah, we're cutting you off. And then someone's just like, oh, yeah, Google does that too. And they're just like, oh, yeah, we're going to cut you guys off too because we have to be fair. And so they cut off Google too.
Mm.
But then, like in the press release, I read that like when Apple supplied comments, like we're working with Google to resolve the issue. And they certainly did not say that about Facebook. And so I would love to see how much chaos is going on over in those companies and like that region where everything is kind of along those like kind of so much stuff is coupled around there and using those internal apps and everything. Like it's just gonna be carnage because it's
like Enron level chaos.
Exactly. I called it the Red Wedding of Silicon Valley. And everybody's getting killed.
And everyone at Google is like, "What? You guys use iPhones?"
Right?
I thought we had
all of, if you can't, that's what they did. Like,
think of that.
That's a good way to like call all your employees. It's like everybody report in on this internal app right now.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you can't open that app?
Why not?
Sorry, you're fired.
I see. Oh. You were on an iPhone.
Mm.
You are fired.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Let's bring that. Just clean house that way. They've got to give you a Google phone when you work at Google. Surely.
Yeah, I would think so. You get a Pixel.
It's you get a Pixel and a Pixel. Chromebook.
Yeah.
And like that's life. That's all I can do nothing but work in Google products. You write everything in, they've got so many languages.
They do Go, that are like Go's
official,
one of them.
Go's one of their official languages. But quick, I'm going to Google official languages. I'm so meta.
So listen, one more time, it was internal applications
mm-hmm.
for Facebook and Google?
Yep. Because they were using their internal developer licenses, like certificates, to install software on people's phones that weren't internal to the company and were particularly to collect the data. Like both of them had apps that they were, for like lack of a better... Yeah, they were distributing... via a developer license. They were like kind of like sideloading an app on your phone. So technically
to people that weren't working at the company.
Yep. So they for like Facebook was marketing to teenagers through Snapchat and another teenager app. Oh, Instagram. That's not just teenagers. anyways, I'm sounding older by the minute. But like, hey, kids, hey, your parents, install this app and we'll pay you $20 a month. And so you would install this app and it would go through the process like any other. I don't know if you guys have used, surely, I don't think Expo requires it for the apps that we build with React Native. But a lot of apps will, when you're installing an app that is from outside of like the official app store. I know when I was at Daisy and I managed kind of like the BlackBerry server way back in the day when everybody used BlackBerry, and you installed the BlackBerry app. The German's shaking his head.
BlackBerry.
Did you use BlackBerry?
No, thank God.
Yeah. Mm. You're fully justified in saying that.
I've heard horror stories.
Mm. Yeah. Our IT director was like everything's security. And that means everything's BlackBerry. And then the rest of, like, all of the C-suite was just like, screw you, we love our iPhones. And he's just like, well, at least put the BlackBerry app on there. And they're just like, yeah, okay. And so, but the BlackBerry app to use the internal stuff and, like, the whole BlackBerry Enterprise server, the BES, like, you had to, like, install your own self-signed certificates and all of this security protocol stuff. And so you're, like, giving your phone special permissions and, like, putting certificates on your phone and all this stuff.
Right.
Facebook was doing this with an app that they weren't even, like, saying was like, oh, by the way, we're Facebook. They're just like, hey, cool guy, put this app on your phone. We're a cool company that needs some data, and we'll pay you $20 a month and give you $5 if you refer a friend. And then they would have to go through the whole process of like, here, watch this cool Snapchat about how to give us permission to look at everything on your phone while you're using it. And these students were doing it. And so they got busted for that. And like can't do internal apps anymore. Like all of those apps that they used internally, anything that they would have been like beta testing, all of that stuff doesn't work. And same for Google. Except Apple said that they're working with Google to resolve the issue, but they have not said anything of that nature for Facebook. But
which means that they gave them some temporary things so that everything works.
Yeah, well,
until they fix it,
we'll see. I don't know. I would be interested to see like who hates each other. Like of all those guys like swinging at each other, like does everybody just like hate Mark Zuckerberg, like the little kid that nobody likes? I don't know. Cause you get like Tim Curry. Yeah. I was like, Tim Curry? It was like, now I want to watch any number of movies. Legend. Mm. Tim Curry as the devil in Legend.
Yeah.
That's epic. If you haven't seen it.
That's epic.
That's some nice 80s.
That movie scared me as a child.
Yeah. It should have scared us all as children.
Yes.
Yeah. It was great. I watched it again recently, and Sarah hadn't seen it. She was just like, you watched this as a kid? I was just like, I know, right? My parents were dumb. But it was awesome. Google languages. Kotlin, Java. Ooh, goodness. Yeah. Apparently everybody's talking about how Google's all in on Kotlin now, which is a Java-based Android development thing.
Yeah.
This is going to get real boring, but I'm not going to go through the list of Google apps. Let's just move on to that.
I thought we were going to read Kotlin code.
No. You could probably do that. You've done more Java development than any of us.
Yeah, but that's not Kotlin. That's where I looked at the edge of that cliff and was like, I don't know.
Yeah. How different is Kotlin than Java?
Quite a bit, I think. I think basically, and yes, I would get hated on probably on Reddit, but I think, you know, you could.
We look forward to your letters.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for your letters. Yes, you could probably not know that much Java and not have to, and be able to write Kotlin, and. You know, that doesn't necessarily transfer the other way. Like if you know a lot of Java, there's a learning curve there, right? So I think Kotlin's supposed to maybe minimize the amount of Java that you would have to write to do Android development.
What does anyone know what like the preferred method, like the preferred editor or IDE for Google would be for writing in Google stuff?
Probably Android Studio.
Mm-hmm. Android Studio for writing Go code?
Yeah.
Fake news.
Yeah.
False.
Yeah.
I disagree.
That I have no idea about, really.
I'm not going to Google that on air, but it'll be interesting to find that out later.
And yeah.
Maybe talk about it some other time.
Like, what's the hipster thing for Write and Go?
Well, the hipster thing would be Write and Go and Emacs.
Ah.
Oh, my goodness.
Or Vim.
At least Vim.
I feel like there's a lot of Vimmers there.
I like Vim. Vim's my go-to if I'm on a server. I'm always frustrated when I go to like Vim a file and it's not there, and then I have to nano that file. Oh, it feels so awkward in nano.
Ty and I have about gone to blows over Vim.
And we have. We've nano. Got. Yeah, we've traded words.
It's got a GUI. Why don't you use it?
No way. It's so much more efficient in Vim. Plus, you get to play a game to learn how to use Vim. Obviously, that's how complicated it is.
It is, yeah. I mean, first off, you have to know to even be able to do it.
To be able to type, and then you have to know all of the get out of Vim codes. So this is
all you have to know to use Vim is colon Q.
Or the best way to get out is
I'm in Vim. How do I get out? colon Q. Exclamation point to really get out just in case. Yeah,
I'm confirming something because I'm about to say it, and I know like once I say it, if I say the wrong thing, it's going to be big problems. It's in muscle memory
in the background.
Yeah, let's not point that out. It's in muscle memory. I literally just had to go through the process to confirm.
I see. Yeah. So, can't consciously pull it out, though.
No, I couldn't think about it.
It lives in your hands.
It's just like, I'm in Vim now. What do I do to get out? My hands just did it. So when you escape and you're out of like the insert mode and you're in read mode, Shift ZZ kicks you right out.
That's right.
That's my favorite Vim shortcut, and I use that all the time.
Shift, that's a shortcut for
Shift ZZ. It would be the equivalent of quit and save. So WQ.
Q.
Yeah. See, this is madness.
Right, quit. Right and quit. That's what W and Q
There's
stand
a thing
for.
That says Control sense. X is save. Done.
I'll tell you, here's where save. It loses me is like if I want
Wait,
to.
Wait, Vim? Vim or Nano?
Vim.
Okay.
If I want to look at a directory. Now, to be clear, I'm not a fan of Nano either. I would rather use Vim. I know. It used to. Because Nano has its own set of problems of like, how do I save this thing? Like Q, and then it interrogates me to make sure.
That's true. It's just like, you know you're about to overwrite things, right?
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Type the file names.
Yeah.
Like, it's the world in which we live. You save. Are you sure you want to save? Yes. Thanks, buddy.
Are you sure
you took
sure?
care of me?
Yeah.
I'm sure. Let's do this.
Vim, Vim though. Vim.
Hand in hand. Let's go get a coffee.
Coffee with Nano. That's going to be your memoirs.
Coffee with Nano.
Like when Jeremy writes his programming memoirs, it's going to be called Coffee with Nano. And that will be the episode name.
I love it.
Because the context is here, not, whatever the other one was. It was good, but.
No.
Coffee with Nano.
Oh, yeah. Coffee with Nano.
Yeah, I just coined a phrase.
Yeah.
You did. The name of this episode.
Feel so accomplished.
Yeah, that's
it's after, prestigious.
That's a lot. Yeah.
After beating my head against the wall with the codes today, I did something.
You got a small victory.
When you go home and
take this win home, like,
your wife says,
my son says, "Daddy, what was your favorite part of today?" I was like, "Whenever I said X, I don't even remember what I said."
Coffee with Nano. Nano.
Yeah. I didn't even say it. Tyrell said it.
Well, you initiated the phrase.
I just want to get coffee.
We'll you planted you the seed. You'll be credited for it for sure.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. We'll put a TM on it so that it's trademarked, and we'll give you trademark credit.
I love it.
That's good.
I'll use it in Nano.
Man. You should type it in Nano.
Yeah.
And Nano will reply. Are you sure you want to get coffee? You'll overwrite the file name. Yes, do it anyway. Yeah. Okay.
All right. See, Vim doesn't apologize, though. Vim's like, I don't care. And done.
Yeah.
What did you do? I don't know. What'd you do?
As long as you know what you're doing, it will let you do it.
Dude, what's mine say? Sweet. What's mine say? I need to know.
Oh, man. Dude, where's my car?
I love Dude, Where's My Car?
I've actually never seen that movie. I was really confused. I thought Jeremy was having a stroke for a second.
It's like, we've lost him. It's our first on-air stroke. We officially have to quit making a podcast. Yep. We're hospitalizing people.
Just all the flashing the lights.
Just use the GUI, Ty. Just use the GUI.
Can't. Can't do it.
Ivan the Sublime.
I'll use Sublime.
Yeah.
I'll use Sublime.
TextMate.
What?
TextMate.
What's that?
TextMate?
Yeah.
It's a text editor.
Well, I figured that.
It's not as ugly as Sublime.
Sublime's ugly?
I'm kidding. Everyone says Sublime's so pretty.
Yeah.
No, TextMate is just a cheap text editor for Mac that has lots of plugins. And
Was TextMate on Windows as well?
Is it
a different TextMate?
Don't get me lying.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
I won't make
lash
you
lash out.
All the downvotes. All the downvotes. Yeah.
Your neckbeard friends, they're going to hate you.
Oh, that's true. We've now ostracized our entire listening audience. Everyone's going, am I touching their neck?
I
hate that guy now.
To be clear, I have a neck beard right now. I mean, I have a...
Well, you have a beard. Like,
that's true. It's a very long neck beard now.
How does it... Yeah. We'll need to, like, get updates on that.
On my neck beard?
Is it pushing the rest of the beard out?
Not yet. No. See, it's... Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Got some work.
Yeah. That was his beard hitting the mic. That was just beard.
If you want to see some really good, like, sweet neck beards, get on YouTube and look for Dulcimer tutorials.
Dulcimer tutorials?
I can imagine.
My father-in-law loves a dulcimer, and he will watch
Who
YouTube
doesn't,
videos.
Who doesn't, though?
You know, after about five videos, it's like, I had to go in my living room and turn it down because it was like twang, 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 twang. I don't know what they were playing.
You didn't want to like shout from the bedroom,
turn down the dulcimer video.
My daughter hadn't woken up yet.
Yeah.
So I was like, I'm not going to wake her up.
Hey, tone down the lap banjo, okay?
Yes. Is that also what that's called? Or did you just call
it? I just made that up.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
Contender for the name of the episode.
Well, it answered my question too, because I was about to ask if that was the lap, like, horizontal. Well, guitar is horizontal anyway, but
it's four. Yeah. It's a four string lap guitar. Played, stringed.
Yeah,
strummed instrument.
Makes me wonder if it's tuned like a mandolin. Is it like a lap mandolin?
I think maybe? It's actually more like a ukulele, maybe. Then I don't know. I would say
it's a kind of a cross between a uke and a mandolin.
But it's a hammer dulcimer, right?
A hammer dulcimer is a...
It's its own thing as well?
It's its own thing.
So there's a non-hammer dulcimer and a dulcimer?
Yeah, you can use a plectrum or, you know, commonly a pick, as the plebes call them.
Yeah. I'll stick with the plebes.
Okay.
Did you know there's such a thing as a... I'm way off topic.
No, let's go here.
We're exploring it.
I'm making hand motions because I can't think of the name of the instrument. Harp. There's a harp guitar.
Mm-hmm.
It's got four harp strings on top and then regular guitar strings on the bottom.
Yeah,
they have electric ones even.
What's his name? Michael Hedges, I think, is where I first discovered this instrument.
Things are awesome. It's better than a bass.
Like, look up Rat Candy Records and you will immediately know the harp guitar, like everyone on there. Has at least one harp guitar song, probably.
There's this one dude that's on YouTube. My father-in-law watches this guy, too. He's amazing. And he plays Metallica. Just, it's amazing.
On the harp guitar?
On the harp guitar.
Metallica on the harp guitar.
It's pretty sweet.
I'm gonna put that into my browser right now for later consumption.
And you'll wonder, what's that?
Like, why did I type that? What does that even mean?
It's a strange phrase.
Was I having the stroke?
Metallica harp guitar.
Oh, there it is. The Unforgiven Metallica harp guitar cover by Jamie.
There it
Jamie
is.
Jamie Duplessis?
Somebody. No,
oh, man.
He
covers Metallica.
We're getting another letter.
He covers Metallica covering Turn the Page by Bob Seger.
That's amazing.
That's like next
cover inception
level. Ugh. I can't handle that. I'm excited to make my wife watch these tonight. I'll be like, no, look what I found. She will hate every minute of it.
It's unfortunate.
Just to bring it back around to some code, the best coding music I found is when you stick a specific song that's been covered a lot in a loop. YouTube will do that for you too.
I've discovered a recent. Is that the one like
you
specifically?
You can find Paint It Black in like 80 different covers.
Oh, so you loop all of the different covers of it
over and over and over again by different people.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I get what you're saying. Yeah,
so it's a playlist
I'm sure there are some, but they do the, you know, Google will do an automatic playlist. So if you do a cover of in your search, then you can find, it'll be like,
Google's like, here's another one.
Here's another one. Here's another one. It's just automatic.
And here's a banjo. And here's
a dulcimer.
And here's a dulcimer. Metallica on a dulcimer. And then the steel drums.
And a harp guitar.
I prefer the 10-hour loops of things like Gandalf Sax Guy.
Oh, that's so awesome.
Or that was good. Or the Russian one. The star guy.
Yeah, that guy. I actually went 3 hours with that guy once.
Did you? 3 hours is a long time to make it through that video.
3 hours on the loop while I was coding.
You made it longer with Gandalf Sax.
Gandalf actually went 4.5
hours. I was about to say, I think we had a 4.5 hour record in the office with Gandalf Sax. But 3 hours with the Russian.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Yeah. That one I can walk away from and come back and be like, oh, yeah. Still, I was waiting for somebody to do that. Yes. So I think that's a good podcast topic for next time, though. Coding music. We got a lot of opinions on that one.
We do, yeah. I've learned some a new favorite of mine now, which is a Soma FM station.
Yes.
Mission Control. So it's like... recently, yesterday at least, it was like the old Apollo missions with some chilled out electronic music played over it. So it's extra spacey.
Yeah. Some of my film's great. I'm a big advocate of theirs.
I'm enjoying it quite a bit. I like it.
We'll have to save that for next time, though.
Yes. Teaser.
Yeah. It's going to be great.
Stay tuned.
It's going to be so good. So much better than talking about hammer dulcimers and plectrums. Probably not. Plectrum are fun.
Is fun to say. Is that the right way to say it, even?
I would imagine so.
So were we going to get around to the bad habits of Python, or is that for next time?
Revealing our hands. No, yeah. that'll be next time at this point. I mean, I'm pretty sure people are tired of listening to us. I know I would be.
Yeah.
On that note, thanks for listening to us.
Thank you so much.
Jeremy, thanks for coming out, man. It was a lot of fun.
It was a lot of fun, thanks.
We'll have you back again soon, for sure.
No doubt. Thanks for coming.
Thanks for listening to Friday Afternoon Deploy, recorded and produced by the team at Lofty Labs. If you enjoyed the show, you can subscribe to future episodes via iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Spotify. You can also follow at Friday Deploy on Facebook and Twitter for episode previews, live streams, and other behind-the-scenes peeks. Past episodes and show notes on this episode can be found at friday.hirelofty.com. That's friday.hirelofty.com. If you'd like to contact the show, or if you're local to the Northwest Arkansas area and would like to be a guest on the show, you can email us at podcast@hirelofty.com.